All right, listen up, pay attention.
Now, back to the Horsepower for an Hour show.
Action!
With Donnie and Spence.
Our next guest oversees the longest-running automotive magazine in the United States. He's been hired to relocate his company's offices from Newport Beach, California to Ann Arbor, Michigan, to place the company right in the middle of the exciting developments in the automotive industry. We're going to talk to him about trends in the automotive industry, and being the foremost authority on the subject gives him a perspective that we want to see. Larry Webster is the editor-in-chief of Road and Track magazine. He was appointed to that role in May of 2012. Larry is an amateur race car driver and has competed on over a dozen North American premier circuits. He's also a serial collector of vintage cars, which means he restores in his own shop. Welcome to the show, Larry. Welcome to Horsepower for an Hour. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks so much for being our guest here. And I guess we'll just start right at the top. We're at the beginning of a brand new year. And so I want you to look into your crystal ball from where you sit at Road and Track. And what trends do you see in the automotive industry that will be coming down the road in 2013?
Well, I mean, a lot of the ones that aren't such a huge surprise, you know, more focused on fuel economy, greater features, and you know, what I'm seeing more than anything, though, actually, is a greater focus on design. I think the design of vehicles was always in the top three consideration, but now it's not just top three. I think it's number one. And we haven't really seen this since the 1950s when, of course, you know, design trumped everything.
Hi, Larry. This is Donnie Cacciamese, co-host of the Horsepower for an Hour show. I have a question for you. One of the new technologies you just talked about with direct injection, we just did a segment on that, Tom and I did a couple of days ago on our show, and that is really cutting edge when you begin to look closely at direct injection. Well, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, direct injection is one of those enabling technologies that allows you to run turbochargers that are more responsive than they used to be. You remember turbos came around in the 80s. The nice thing about them is when you need extra horsepower, the turbos can kick in and give it to you, but then when you're not using it, when you're cruising down the road, you're saving fuel. And direct injection, essentially what it does is it cools the charge going into the engine, lets you run a higher compression ratio, and you know, all this technical gobbledygook just makes the engine more responsive when you hit the gas. So, yeah, it's a fantastic technology.
Yeah, again, we did a short segment on it, and it's kind of a mind blower because to inject that fuel pulse directly into the cylinder rather than the intake runner, you're using a smaller amount of fuel and getting a better burn, a cleaner burn, and you're using less fuel to do it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. The technology's been around for a while. Volkswagen and Audi have had it for, I think, about, 8 years. And actually, if you go way back in the 50s, Mercedes used it in a Grand Prix race car. So, maybe that proves the adage that there are no new ideas, perhaps.
Larry, this is Bill again. We talked about design. We talked about fuel efficiency as being some of the drivers for 2013. I want to talk about something you didn't mention, and that is electric cars. You know, Toyota just recently halted development on their electric cars. Chevy's Volt is being steeply discounted in order to sell cars. Nissan's Leaf is selling modestly. Are electric cars doomed, or is development merely on hiatus?
I would say the answer to that, both of those, is no. I mean, maybe some of the projections were a little overambitious. Electric cars are still coming. I think the development just is slow. It's taking the public longer to recognize what their strong suits are. And essentially that is, if you do a lot of city driving and you don't go far from your home, the electric's a perfectly viable alternative that has some advantages. But, you know, like anything, any new technology, any big switch, it just takes time for people to accept and buy and in any kind of meaningful numbers.
What do you think it's going to take to push the American consumer over the edge and get them to really embrace electric cars?
Oh, man. I don't think I could begin to answer that question in a knowledgeable way. But, you know, the challenge is, we know, right? It's the range problem. You know, the thing with the Volt, which is pretty handy, it would get you 30 miles of electric only. And then if you wanted to go farther, it kicks in the gas engine, so you don't have to worry about stopping and charging your batteries. The issue, however, is now you're carrying two powertrains. You're carrying this gas engine, and you're also carrying this full electric powertrain, so it ups the cost. And so these are the challenges for these types of vehicles. But I think, if I had to take a guess, I think the big thing is the energy storage. So you have these huge, heavy batteries that don't store a lot of energy. You know, you take a gallon of gasoline that stores 16 kilowatt hours of energy. Equivalent battery is about the size of a 6-foot man. It's huge. So, you know, you just look at the physics of that and you think, well, here's the fundamental problem. So as the energy storage capacity goes up in the batteries, as they can charge them quicker, as the infrastructure arrives, suddenly electric vehicles make more sense. And then the big question, when is this going to happen? I don't know. Who knows?
Our guest is Larry Webster. He's the editor of Road and Track magazine.
Larry, let's get over to the magazine once again with Road and Track. What is your target audience?
You know, I think our target audience is car enthusiasts, people that love great stories about compelling automobiles, love performance cars, sports cars, luxury cars, and just sort of the whole life around them. I think there's a certain culture and lifestyle around these wonderful automobiles that people enjoy. So, if you know, I think that's probably spans all ages, all income levels, kind of all everything.
And that's one of the interesting things. I know we all grew up the same era, and we had magazines were everywhere, whether it was Mad Magazine, Sports Illustrated for guys, or cars magazines like Road and Track. And it seemed like we were more patient, sitting down, opening a magazine, looking at the pictures. How do you look at that today between what you would do on the Internet and what you would do with an actual printed magazine?
Well, I mean, you know, everybody's got their theories. You know, we tend to think you have to tailor the content for the medium. And it seems to us that each of them has their place, right? So you have sort of the Internet, which is maybe more often it's shorter, digestible content, maybe lots of pictures. It's stuff you can easily pass around. I'm not sure yet, you know, this might change, but, you know, at the present time, I'm not sure that people, you know, sit down and spend time with their computer reading, like, a long-form 3,000-word piece. It's not to say it doesn't happen. I'm just saying, let's say in general. And, you know, we sort of think that the printed product still has that appeal where somebody that really wants to immerse themselves in something. But then to keep their attention, it's really it's our job to produce a quality product, right? So the writing has to be top rate, the photography, the design, all that stuff has to be geared to that sort of immersive experience. And we have to just make sure that you know, we do our job.
And I know between all three of us here with magazines in the old days, when you were a kid, you tore them apart and put them up on your walls. So there was always that, you know, in your hands, your favorite driver, your favorite racer, athlete, you had it up. So that's what we still love about the hard form magazine. It's cool.
Well, Larry, the automotive magazine space is very, very competitive. I mean, you've got competitors like your sister publication, Car and Driver, Automotive Magazine, Hot Rod, Automobile, just to name a few. So how does Road and Track compare to these other competitors? What differentiates you from these other mags?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. It is kind of crowded. I think what you'll see, we're still kind of forming this, but I think essentially what you'll see is a lot of what I told you. I think we will be the home of the long-form journalism, right? Okay, so we're not a buyer's guide. We're not necessarily going to cover every car, every spec, every horsepower. We'll stick to the stuff that we find naturally compelling and interesting. And we can branch out into motorsports, of course. It's always been part of Road and Track's heritage. Vintage, we'll concentrate on the design. I think there's an opportunity for us to do a little bit of light DIY. And then, of course, to cover all the stuff that's around the automobile. I mean, there's this great stuff that we all are interested in. It's not necessarily the vehicle itself, but has some sort of tangential connection. So I think once you add all those things up, in addition to our car testing, our reviews and things like that, suddenly you have a unique product in the marketplace. Because you're right, it is kind of crowded.
Our guest is Larry Webster, who is the editor-in-chief of Road & Track magazine. Larry, let's turn our attention to something that's a little bit more contemporary, if we can, the Detroit Auto Show. Give us your impressions of this year's Detroit Auto Show.
I mean, there's only one impression, and that's Corvette, right? You know, that really sucked the air out of the room this year in a great way. It's a fantastic-looking vehicle. I can't wait to drive it. And I think, you know, the big challenge for the Corvette and the whole Chevy team is to make sure that the vet is on the minds and the aspirations of the next generation. You know, it seems like people that want the Corvette, they've already known about it for a number of years, but it maybe has a little bit of a staid reputation. So I think they've really rejuvenated it. It looks just fantastic from all angles. If they achieve what they say they set out to do, which essentially is to make it more of a driver's car, they want to give us that connection to the road that, you know, Road and Track readers really value. And the Corvette's always been a fantastic bang for your buck bargain, but now if they could deliver that handling and that sort of that kind of visceral feel that we sort of want out of these cars, then I mean I think they have a home run.
Well, not only are you the editor in chief, but you are yourself an auto racer. So tell us a little bit about your auto racing experiences as an amateur race car driver. You know, what cars have you driven competitively and so forth?
Yeah, I've driven a whole bunch, but the thing I think that's really focuses about amateur racing is, I always tell people, it's so fascinating because nothing I do has such highs and such lows, right? So you're on the track, you're on some race, you pass some guy you've been trying for three laps to do, and you whatever, you finish three, and you feel like, man, that was awesome, I'm Superman. But then, like an hour later, like you crash or you bump into somebody, and it's like this low that it's like the depths of misery. And it just fascinates me that we can do this thing that is so inherently thrilling, and it can wrap up all these emotions inside of one day and one weekend. And I don't know how else you get that, which is one of the reasons I really love it.
Larry, this is Donnie once again. I got a question for you with respect to the 2012 Paris Car Show. Now, we did a segment not long ago on the new Peugeot Onix. Have you had an opportunity to preview that car?
No, I haven't. What was it? I mean, it's not ringing a bell.
It's a supercar that Peugeot has. It's still in concept form at the moment, but it really is pretty sharp. You get a chance to Google it. It's Peugeot Onix. It looks pretty stellar, and the way the article reads is that it's going to be debuted this year, or excuse me, it was last year at the 2012 Paris Car Show.
Wow. So this is one of those, what I would guess is it's a hybrid supercar, correct?
Correct. Yeah, I think that there is a 3.5 liter V8 motor and then an electric motor at each wheel producing, if memory serves, 80 horsepower at each corner.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds pretty fantastic. If they can keep the weight down to what they're talking about, 2,500 pounds, I mean, that thing's going to be stellar. I mean, it'll be interesting, too, right? Because, you know, Porsche's coming out with their own version, the 918 Spyder, and we expect Ferrari will show the Enzo replacement in Geneva in March, which we haven't heard a whole lot about, but, you know, I'm assuming it's going to be a hybrid as well. So it's funny, you know, these supercars, they feel like they have to have some sort of hybrid powertrain, and it has its advantages, but, you know, be curious to see how the consumers react to it.
Well, quickly before we run out of time, I do have one question for you, and that is Mercedes recently issued a statement that they are going to discontinue the use of kinetic energy recovery system in favor of energy recovery system. And I and our racing correspondent here at the studio, we couldn't identify the difference between KERS and ERS. Do you know anything about that?
So this is in Formula One, correct?
That's in Formula One, correct. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, this is very fascinating because kinetic energy is, of course, a form of energy. It's just what you're moving. So I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. How interesting. When did that come out?
I want to say it was 2 weeks ago. I found it in some of the research that we were doing here in studio because I thought that was interesting as well. It is a form of energy. There's also the potential, and there are different forms of heat energy. But I guess our understanding here, Jim and I, as we were looking at the release, it said they were going to discontinue KERS in favor of ERS, discontinue kinetic energy. They're dropping the kinetic distinction in favor of just energy. Tom, wasn't that that's the way the article read, correct?
Yeah, that's the way they rolled it out.
Interesting. So, I guess.
Yeah, maybe they're just using the, I'm not even going to guess here. I mean, Formula One is so fascinating. I went down to that race in Texas, and, we're walking around the pits, and it's such a fantastic experience. There's so, you know, the smell, the fuel, the sound of the cars, the drivers are just so talented, which you could tell seeing it by up front. But it's also so crazily frustrating because nobody will tell you anything. And you just want to know why they're doing what they're doing, what's going on, what's in that car. What is this KERS? What is this ERS? I mean, are they just, you know, is it just sort of like a smoke screen so we don't think about this, you know? Who knows? I mean, it is a fascinating sport. I have to give it that.
And Donnie, we got a little bite of that off the NHRA, too. It's a blast and it's a roar, but some of the people, hey, I'm working here.
For sure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I went into Kalita's shop here is in Michigan, and I did a piece on their top fuel dragster. And there's a lot of things that I loved about that. You know, just the size of the fuel pipe, which is like, it's like a sewer pipe going from your house. They have that supercharger, and they want to test its flow. And they need something to drive the supercharger when it's not on the engine, so they have this specially built dyno. And so just to drive the supercharger, they had like a specially built V8 engine with like 450 horsepower just to spin the supercharger. You know, all that stuff, it's like crazy land. And, you know, the fact that they keep those things together, and even the fact that I'm sure you've seen them like sitting there idling and popping, and then somebody climbs in them. Just it's just one of those things. If anybody's out there who's never been in a Top Fuel race, you just have to go. You can't believe it. It's fantastic.
Awesome.
Larry, it has been fascinating, but we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest has been Larry Webster. He is the editor-in-chief of Road and Track magazine. Thank you so much for being our guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.